Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Todd Schnick. How you doing, bud?
I'm good, Stone. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm tired, man. I've been up all night trying to edit that video you and I shot.
Yeah, that was quite an undertaking, I'm sure, with the raw footage we put together. Good Lord.
I hope no one makes any buy decisions on video based on what they see you and I do. I'm serious. I stayed up all night, but I think I have you and I looking good. Out of the 22 minutes of video we shot, I've got a good 38 seconds of you and I setting up the whole Beyond the Brochure
that's
thing.
That's a higher percentage than we're usually accustomed to with our raw footage.
But actually, it's a lot of fun. We got some neat stuff coming up. We're doing the Beyond the Brochure quick shots for associations and office buildings and that kind of thing, so that's going to be fun. We've got several video dust jacket shoots coming up, so we're busy, huh?
Yeah, it's getting crazy at the High Velocity organization.
Yeah, so where are we on the whole marathon thing? When's the next one coming?
No, as I said last week, I had to delay it because of a back injury, coupled with the fact that my wife's been, as you know, in the hospital for most of the last month, so I'm way behind. But I'm pushing for one in late October, so.
Well, I'm interested to know a little bit about the health effects, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but you don't really look like a marathon runner yet. I mean, but are you enjoying some health benefits from it? Do you feel better? Do you have more energy?
Oh, I absolutely feel better. Coupled with the fact that, and thank you for the nice shout at my appearance. I'm one of the more rotund marathoners out there. But I definitely have more energy. I've changed my diet completely because a long distance runner needs a different kind of diet than what I was doing. So I'm eating better, which that coupled with the exercises is making me feel better. So
okay, I know we have a show, but this is kind of interesting to me. So you know, it's our show. They can wait a minute, right? What does a marathon runner eat?
Well, you got to have a lot more energy. You know, if you're trying to lose weight, you'd want to cut back on carbs, right?
Right.
Well, you need carbs for the long distance run. So whenever in my history I needed to lose weight, I would just go and do the no carb diet, which is very unhealthy, but it worked for me in terms of losing weight.
Right.
But for someone who's running, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 miles, you need more energy for your glucogen stores. And so I've had to adjust my thinking and I have a diet that's almost 60% carbs.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings on the whole thing.
You did.
All right, now we can do the show. Who'd you bring with you?
We have Justin Hahnemann, who was actually a previous guest on the High Velocity Radio Show. He's an author, an exec with Coca-Cola, and a recording artist who we'll talk to him in a few minutes. Also with him is Monique Hahnemann. She's an author of a new book that we're going to talk about today. She's also the founding partner of ISHR Group, and we'll learn more about that. Welcome to the show, Monique and Justin.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
We are excited. You know, there's a very very distinguished fraternity of second time guests. So
yeah, I feel very privileged.
Very privileged. Very privileged. But enough of you. Let's talk to Monique. It's great to meet you today. Excited that you're here. So tell us about this new book that you got coming out.
New book, very exciting. Just came out. It's called The High Road Has Less Traffic, and it's really my story about my divorce and actually somewhat of a how-to manual. For other women going through divorce and figuring out the steps that you need to be aware of. And as you can tell by the book title, it's all about taking the high road, and that's really the way to get through it.
Does that mean that typically most people take the low road through a divorce?
That's a very good inference, yes. I think too many people take the low road, and at the end of the day, it's incredibly damaging to the family, particularly if kids are involved. And you just need to take the high road and look to the future and get over it and don't swing golf clubs and don't cut holes in clothes and throw them on the front lawn. It's about taking the high road.
So you're suggesting that Mrs. Woods shouldn't have used the golf clubs?
Well, you know, we don't really know the story that happened there. I'm just suggesting that perhaps that's not the high road.
You know, I had a mentor once that suggested that anytime I was really angry about an issue, that I might sit down and write a letter without ever actually sending it, but to sit down and write it. And I'm wondering if crafting this book wasn't somehow cathartic or healing for you. Can you speak to that a little
Absolutely. Bit? Absolutely. The book was incredibly cathartic. And when I first came up with the thoughts about writing it, it was really because I love to read. And as I was going through my situation and starting to ask questions about where do I turn and what do? I started looking towards books, and I could not find that book that was that girlfriend who was just going to give it to me straight up and tell me, here's how you tell your mom, here's how you tell your kids, here's what you look for when you hire an attorney. And so for me, it really became taking what I had learned and putting it into writing, which, oh, by the way, was incredibly cathartic in the process.
Now, is it written for the lady in this relationship, or is it written for either side?
I would like to think that it has applicability to either side, but it really is directed, as you can tell by the book cover, towards the woman. And as I started writing it, it first started as, right, the woman going through a divorce or thinking about going through a divorce or being caught off guard by being told someone wants a divorce. But there also is a piece that came into it that's really applicable for people currently in relationships to sort of keep an eye on the importance of respect and communication and not getting to the point where they might need the rest of the book.
So there's some in this book about those that are considering going through that process, that there's some things they can think about, some decisions they can make, maybe shifting their focus to the high road that may actually save their relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah, people should read this book before they get to divorce, not after they're done and the papers are signed. Absolutely.
Where in the world, and I know our listeners have this same question, where in the world do you find the time to write a book?
I think it's all about priorities. And this was something that was a priority to me, getting this on paper and helping other people. Since going through my divorce, literally not a week goes by where somebody doesn't call me, either a friend, an acquaintance, a friend of a friend, people I've never heard of in my life, and ask me questions. And I realized there was such a need for this out there. So it became a priority for me and a lot of late nights.
I suspect that there's an inspiration when you know there's a lot of people that do need the help. And as you said, when you were seeking counsel and guidance, that you couldn't find what you were looking for, and so
there's a lot of books out there about divorce, but none of them were the ones that just were raw and honest and just told you how it is. You know, it's horrible, and you know, there's if you don't cry all the time, you know, you've got to find laughter somewhere. So I tried to make the book just really my story and honest, and here's what it's like, and be that girlfriend that just tells it to you straight up.
Why don't you share with us a little bit about what you do for your day job?
Oh, the day job, yes. I founded an organization called ISHR Group 10 years ago, and we do leadership assessment, development, and coaching. So we do work around the world, and most of our clients bring us in to help their high-potential leaders become more effective leaders, and we do that through leadership development training, through leadership coaching, through something that we call leadership assessment, where we work one-on-one with leaders and help them better understand their strengths and development needs.
Are there lessons that from the book that you wrote that apply to an organization? And is there value in taking the high road in a workplace environment?
Oh, gosh, there's so many lessons. Absolutely. So, you know, I laugh at myself because my career is assessing people. And obviously, I perhaps didn't assess the first go around as well as I should have. So it's sort of hilarious when you think of it in that angle. But there's so many lessons. And as we look at leaders and, you know, we see so many examples in the newspaper today in the news just about leaders that don't take the high road. And so the overarching message of the book is just in any situation, the high road is just the way to take. People don't expect it necessarily, and it's just the right thing to do.
This character that you brought with you, Justin Hahnemann, is an out-of-the-closet, open Christian. And so I'm curious, does your faith have some impact on the way that you conduct your work and the way you run these assessment centers and that kind of
Absolutely.
Thing?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And it's when I started writing the book, one of the first things I wrote as I got into the prologue was, this isn't a faith-based book, but my faith comes through so clearly in the book. And I do think that's a component of taking the high road as well. Like there's just no good that comes from taking the low road. And my values in came through very clearly. My faith came through very clearly.
Well, I'd actually like to explore that with both of you, if you don't mind, Justin, because I sense sometimes that even people of relatively strong faith sometimes are a little bit reluctant to let that come through in a work environment, almost to the extent that they consciously sort of tuck that away in a box over here and put it in the corner. And then at 5:30, they might go home and read a devotional or even spend some prayer time with their kids. But, you know, from 8:30 to 5, speak to that a little bit, if you will, and how you've chosen to approach it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And from the standpoint of thinking about it from a business perspective, and how do you either demonstrate your faith or talk about or not talk about your faith in the work environment, I'd say every company is really different. And what I found is, for me, the way it works is, you know, I don't openly come to the office looking to bring up all kinds of faith concepts and whatnot. However, what I would say is, yeah, my actions and behaviors, how I treat other people, how I handle business situations, how I handle business relationships, how I leverage those relationships, and just kind of the way of operating is one founded on principles that I would say are not necessarily the ones that might be built up through the work environment. So my idea is, if I operate in a certain way, people can either follow that or look up to that. And a lot of those principles are faith principles, but I don't come out openly and say, you know, you need to believe in X, Y, Z, or you're really not going to be operating in a certain way in the business environment. So I think there's a fine balance. The other thing is, I'd say in the work environment, I think you do have to be very careful because there are plenty of people that are not Christians out there, and that's just a fact. And so I think you have to be very careful in terms of how you mix your faith and your work environment, and just as much as how you mix all your investment and outside activities with the work environment.
Now, did you consult to the writing of this book at all, or did you just take the kids out for pizza and leave her alone, or how did you guys work that?
So my role in the book was as an initial editor. And the last time I was here, I was here to talk about my book, Make It Happen. And so I had been through the publishing of the first book, quote unquote. And so I was able to provide some of my experience to Monique, and then serve as an editor. And then that was pretty much my role in terms of how this came together. There is some linkage in terms of some of the songs and ideas and concepts and titles of my own music on my new album that are referenced in the book. So that's the linkage.
Well, let's get into that, because there's a tie-in between your new album and Monique's book. So why don't we shift and let's talk for a minute about your book. As you just said, when you were on the show previously, we were talking about your book, Make It Happen. But we're here today to talk about your new CD. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what was interesting, and I was saying this earlier before we went on the air, is that my new album, Let Go and Let God, arrived on our doorstep the exact same week as Monique's first book. So from that standpoint, we thought it was a lot of fun to be able to market these things together and be able to get them out there together to really make an impact. Let Go and Let God is my second album, and I released a country music album 4 years ago. This album, again, just out 2 weeks ago, is full of songs that I've written, music and lyric, and then and Just Pray, the first single, was just released over the last week or two. So it's been a lot of fun to get this project out. And you're right, you know, back to the faith conversation, this album combines a lot of the faith concepts and whatnot from my leading worship with my church with some of my passion for telling stories.
So when did you find out that you could sing well enough that it made some sense to invest some money in getting
a
CD produced?
That's a great question. So, you know, lots of people are told that they're good singers or good writers. You know,
one ever told me that, by the way.
Just so then maybe not. Maybe not a good investment of your time and whatnot. But I grew up playing piano, and I grew up singing in the church choir, so I knew that I had an interest and passion in that area. And when I was 31, I really had an interest in doing something again on the music front, and was introduced to my voice coach, Heidi Higgins, who's with Jan Smith Studios here in town. And that really was the seed that started the music interest of mine. So that led into writing songs, that led into performing, that led into putting the first album together. Feedback from that was positive. And then once that ball started rolling, I don't think you ever stopped pursuing your creative interests. And so for me, you know, it was just a matter of time before I put together a full album of music that I had written. And so here we are 4 years later, and Let Go and Let God is now out there and released.
Well, it's two big shifts from your first CD to your second. The first one was country.
Absolutely.
And this one is contemporary Christian. And then the first album only contained one song that you actually wrote, and this new album is 100% your words and music. So that's kind of, those are kind of great advances.
It is, and I tell you, I think you're more passionate about your own material. There's no doubt about that, and anybody that's in the music business will agree. The first album was a lot of fun, and to me it was kind of testing the waters. It
right.
was, is this something that people really will like? And I will say that it was a little scary, that first album that I put into like a good friend's hand or someone that I didn't know, or seeing the tunes downloaded off iTunes. But what happened was I got a lot of very positive feedback, and that then contributed to the interest in, hey, maybe I should explore this further. And then I mentioned earlier, I lead worship with my church, Buckhead Church, part of North Point Community Church. So every Sunday, I get a chance to impact kids in a way that's very positive. And for me, that then provided some seeds that went into, you know, writing a lot of the music and material on this new album.
Yeah, the first song downloaded on the first album was probably your mother.
Yeah.
I'm recalling Jeff.
I don't know that she's on iTunes, though.
I'm recalling a story by Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon. The very first person who bought a book on Amazon was Mrs. Bezos.
Was Mrs.
Yeah. So
yeah,
well, we're gonna give our audience a taste of your first signal. It's a song called Just Pray, and you're going to tell us a little about that. But let's listen to a short clip of that.
It sounds good.
That makes him strong and mighty, lifts me up to take a stand and just pray.
Wow, I like it.
That's a lot of fun.
Now, I just saw something over the weekend that you're starting. You got some West Coast distribution.
I did. Yeah. So I do have a small label that I work with, Tate Music Group, and then a promoter, Mission House Music, and so Just Pray has gone out nationally, and if you know anything about radio, which you guys of course do, you know that it is not easy for an unknown, not major label artists to get picked up. I think we've got some good material here, and in my mind, just like with the book, the first person impacted is a success for the album. With my book, the first book sold was an impact to that individual, and also helped raise money for charity. This album, like my other projects, there will be a portion of the proceeds that will go to the USO, which is the charity that I've selected for this project. And then also Monique's book has a charity bent as well.
Well, we're going to get into how the two projects are related. Tell us quickly about the song Just Pray. The inspiration behind it, it's a great song.
Yeah, Just Pray. I went into the thought on this song with, I want to write a worship song. So, you know, when you write a worship song for contemporary Christian space, it's usually some repeat lyrics or music that's easy to remember and easy to pick up, and also has a really good hook. And so I really wanted it to be an uplifting song, one that talked about, hey, you know, God is there for you, and prayer is a part of life, and through the ups and downs, there's one place you can turn, and that's the bottom line for Just Pray. And I do think it's one of the strongest tracks on this album. Like any album, you know, love every song, and so I think certain songs are stronger than others from the standpoint of marketability.
But this one's your favorite.
This
one's
one of my
baby,
favorites.
Right?
Yeah, this is one that's been repeated many times on my iPod in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
So walk me through the process of what. So you've just launched this new album out 2 weeks ago. What steps would have to be taken for it to ultimately get played on, say, the Fish?
Yeah, so the Fish is actually owned by a larger organization, so they're not an independent radio station that's here in Atlanta. And the first mistake that some artists think is you can just send a good CD down there to the Fish or any other station and they're going to play it. That doesn't happen anymore. It does in the smaller markets. You can still get some airplay in the more local rural markets, I'll call them. But with the Fish, and they're part of a larger organization, you typically need to be linked in with a major label or have a promoter that has a relationship with that that band of stations, and then they will consider your project or your music as part of their package of a playlist, basically. And a playlist is what you hear around the clock on their station. One thing to consider, though, is they're not looking for somebody looking to put a song out that is looking to be on the radio and check that box. They're looking for artists that are in it for the long term, that are making an investment in the space, and that truly are bringing a positive message. Because at the end of the day, you know, the station has got to be behind the music.
Well, I bet if Todd just picks up the phone and calls them, they'll play it. Won't they?
Probably.
We can try after this interview.
Right. I listen to the Fish every morning when I'm getting ready, and I can't wait till the day that I hear Just Pray.
Yeah. Well, the song belongs there.
It absolutely does.
The quality of it, because you can write a nice song, but the music could be subpar. I mean, the quality of the production and the engineering sounds phenomenal to me.
You know, all credit for what you just said, the production, the sound quality, the mix goes to John Carrozza. John Carrozza is an individual here in Atlanta that's a producer, that's a artist, that he plays just about every instrument you can imagine. But it really takes the right ear to be able to put parts together and mix them in a way that makes sense for the specific artist. And the reason I say that is because I've worked with different producers over the years, and not every producer is a good fit for every artist. But for John and I, we just, you know, I could sit down with him and sing a cappella how the song would go, start to finish. And he would just have the guitar, and we would nail it. In 5 or 10 minutes, we'd have the bass guitar track down. And that just doesn't happen with a lot of people in the music industry. But John is a guy that, you know, every time I'd be working with him, we'd come up with something that was just, you know, incredible, and deserves all the credit around production.
I think the two most courageous people in the world are those that take up the flag and fight for the country and fight for, you know, and those who sing a cappella.
And, you know, I actually enjoy singing a cappella. I mean, I can, you know, I just have I can hear things in songs a lot of people don't hear, and I enjoy making sure pitch is accurate. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves with artists today is that a lot of them really can't hold pitch, but they're using technology to make their voice on pitch. You mentioned the military and the service that they provide. And I mean, amazing. I totally agree. I think they would be my number one. And I did write a song actually for those that serve. It's called One Pledge, and it's the last song on this album. And it's all about the American flag. It is all about those that serve, the mothers, the fathers, the sisters, the brothers, the different bands of the Army and the Navy, Air Force and Marines lean on each other and lean into each other for support. And I put that song on here because of my family's history in the military. My father flew medical helicopters, and for me, that's also the linkage back to the USO.
Now, haven't you? I feel like I've heard that song. Haven't you released that already? I mean,
It did come out. I put it out as what I called a featured single. So it's something that really doesn't go with the rest of the album. And you know, a lot of labels would never have included that song on the project because it didn't fall into the genre. So it didn't fit in contemporary Christian, well, we shouldn't include it. Well, one nice thing about being an independent artist with a small label is I have a lot more say in terms of what goes on the album, and that song wasn't going to be cut.
I'm reminded of an Andy Griffith episode where Andy is challenging Barney, you know, what is a cappella? You know, and Barney goes, a cappella. He starts singing. He doesn't know what it is.
Well, that's the way that I write. So it's funny. People always ask, well, what instrument do you play? And I play piano, but I play nothing on these songs. And when I'm writing songs, I write the music and lyrics and just and record that a cappella. And that's the song. Wow. And then what I do is I get with my producer and we put down the actual chord charts. That's very different than a lot of singer-songwriters that will actually, most of them play guitar or play piano, and they'll be writing chords that they hear in the song, and then that will be the starts, the beginnings of the song. For me, for some reason, the way that's worked for me is I'm going to sing the whole song for you, and then we're going to add the intros and the outros and the bridge, let's say. I'll do that with somebody that's the person that can play the instruments.
Well, I think it's great that you get your ideas when you're swimming.
Is that where
your inspiration comes from?
That's really funny. Yeah, when I'm working out, it's usually when I have the most ideas. And I know this is going to sound really silly, but I will call my voicemail and sing the idea because I will lose it.
Yes, he will.
I have got to write it down and record it immediately because it's something that I think comes and goes.
Well, let's use your song title, and let's just pray we never hear Stone sing a cappella again.
Something else after the show today.
Absolutely. Monique, the two projects are related, so why don't you begin to talk about how the book and the album are...
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first connection really came when Justin and I first met. We were talking on the phone one evening, and I was just sort of frustrated about a lot of things going on in my life, and I said, I just need to let go and let God. And Justin said, what did you say? I said, I need to let go and let God.
He wouldn't copyrighted it right there, right?
No, I said, I just wrote that song.
He said, why did you say that? I said, because that's what I need to do. I know, but why did you say that? Well, because, I mean, we went back and forth for several iterations. And finally, I said, what are you getting at? And he said, I just wrote a song called Let Go and Let God. And that was the first sort of coincidence, if you will, around all of this. The second piece that I'll say ties together is Jeremiah 29:11. You know, God has a plan for all of us really was sort of my guiding verse going through my divorce and was something I leaned on heavily. And Justin's written a song about, you know, God's plan. So there's been several ties that have gone back and forth, which really makes it neat.
Yeah, and people get scared off by the Christian thing. You know, back to your earlier question on the work and mix, and I guess maybe it's just from being in an environment every week and in part of a place that celebrates, you know, life application and learning from your faith and how you apply it. And, but for me, I get excited and more interested and more, focused, I think from investing time into writing this kind of material and to linking it back. If you remember my first book, there was a linkage around faith. And for me, that was just part of my personal brand. I mean, those things to me are a lot of fun and to kind of find how they go together and what are the dependencies and what are the linkages that you need to consider. And so for me, you know, back on that earlier question, it's, you know, people that are typically a little nervous or scared of talking the Christian topic, have either been in an environment growing up that was a negative environment or they were told they had to live their life a certain way or the fire, hell, and brimstone would come down on top of them. And you almost have to undo some of that to open people up to being excited about their faith again.
And I'll say with relation to the book, you know, I mentioned that I've spoken with several women going through this. And over the course of the last several years, you know, Christian women, Jewish women, women who wouldn't say they practiced a faith. One woman came to talk to me who practices Muslim, and every one of them turned to a higher being, a God, in the course of their deep valleys going through this. So I think there's that core, you know, you need to rely on something to help you.
Well, I am absolutely fascinated by the Hahnemann Publishing House. I mean, this is incredible.
Hahnemann Creative.
Right, Hahnemann Creative. And I know Justin mentioned that, you know, on this album anyway, Just Pray is sort of his baby. Was there a chapter or two in the book that you put together that really stood out for you, like really maybe your favorite even?
Yeah, there is clearly, and it's the chapter on forgiveness. And I say to people, if you read nothing else in the book, read the chapter on forgiveness. And I am not one who swears a lot, but I went through a period where, honestly, the F-bomb was coming out of my mouth a fair bit. I was very angry. And so the chapter in the book is, it talks about the F word and how the F word came to have a totally new meaning for me, and it was forgiveness, because that was a turning point.
Now, forgiveness in the context of forgiving your partner or forgiving yourself or both?
You know, frankly, both. But at that point, it was really forgiving my ex-husband at that point and just not harboring that anger and that resentment and letting go and looking forward, letting go and letting God. And forgiveness was a huge, huge turning point for me. I can remember, and people saw the change. And that's what. And I have people today calling me saying, how can I forgive? Teach me how to forgive. and it's not something you can teach, but it's life-changing.
But you can't really move on to the next part of your life without that forgiveness.
You absolutely can't move on. And that's what I try. That's what I've tried in this chapter to convey, right? It's a very selfish act to forgive. You do it. You make the decision to forgive. It makes you feel better. It has nothing to do with the person you're forgiving.
Because there's a fear they're not going to forgive you back.
And you can't rely on it. You can't count on that. It's selfish. It's the best thing you can do for yourself.
Well, and it must be incredibly liberating to forgive after such a long period of not forgiving. That's to be a tremendous weight lifted off of you.
Yeah, it. I have known a couple of people in my life who have been through traumatic situations who have chosen not to forgive, and literally 20, 30 years later, they're still talking about it. And I swore that wasn't going to be me. So I always knew that forgiveness would come, right? It had to. But I think everyone also has to go through their stages of anger and denial, excuse me, and grief and whatnot before they can get to forgiveness. And when you do, it's a beautiful thing.
I can remember going to a couples workshop sponsored through our church, and there was a little 15-minute presentation and a little bit of an assessment around your propensity to forgive yourself, your capacity to forgive. Boy, 5 gold stars. I nailed it.
Nice.
That piece I could do.
Yeah, I always say don't let anybody steal your joy, and I think that without forgiveness, you're letting a lot of people steal your joy or letting one person steal your joy, and you can't go through life living that way.
Well, Monique, you'll be pleased to know that I'm able to forgive Stone every single day.
That's a good thing.
So the both these projects are tied to charities. Are they different charities? I mean, you talked about the USO a bit, Justin, but tell us a little bit more about those.
They are. I don't have a specific single charity chosen for some of the proceeds from the book, but they will go to organizations around the world that support helping women and children survive their divorce. So the first two charities that come to mind are certainly Visions Anew, which is based here in Atlanta, and then Divorce Care and Divorce Care for Kids, which is their partner organization, which myself, my kids and I both went through. Fabulous organization. And so proceeds will go to those types of organizations that really help people heal through the process faster.
Do you mind if we dive into the mud a little bit maybe and get real tactical? It's my understanding from the outside looking in that money often has a lot to do with why couples get divorced, and money's got to be one of the primary issues that are weighing on people's minds during and after a divorce. What counsel, what advice, if any, do you share with your readers on that whole topic of money?
Absolutely. The biggest piece of advice I offer, and this is really targeted at so many people I know who don't have a grip of their finances in good times, let alone if bad times hit. And so the biggest piece of advice I give is, you know what, couples need to talk regularly about what their financial picture is. They both need to be on the same page, understand what's coming in, what's going out, because you don't want to find yourself in a situation of facing divorce and be backpedaling trying to figure that out. And so the advice I give in the book is discover that now. And people say, well, I'm never going to get divorced. I know it's never going to happen to me, so I don't need to worry about this stuff. And my example is, you know what, your husband could drop dead of a heart attack tomorrow, and you're still left not knowing what's coming in, what's going out. So money is a huge thing. Then certainly, and in the book itself, there's several worksheets around, excuse me, putting together a budget and understanding your financials and making sure you've got a good grip on that now.
So what is the, you know, you talk about the high road. What is the easiest or most prevalent low road trap that people have a tendency to fall into in your experience?
Degrading the other parent in front of the children. When I was going through my divorce, everyone I met, if I found out that they were children of divorce, I said, what made you get through it successfully or what made you not get through it successfully? And the consistent answer was, my parents didn't degrade one another. They didn't fight in front of one another. They didn't blame one another. I never felt guilty. And that, and the opposite, the people that struggled through divorce as kids, it was because their parents hated one another and there was guilt involved and they didn't know who they should love more. And I swore I was never going to put my kids through that.
So, Justin, we've mentioned, we touched around it, this whole idea of really being you and bringing your faith to all of who you are. You're fortunate enough to work inside a corporate environment that allows you to express yourself. And my sentiment is that allows you to be a better employee, a better asset for the organization. Are we allowed to talk about who you're with?
Of course. Yeah. I work for Coca-Cola in the bottling side of the business. So Coca-Cola Enterprises, and I lead an organization that focuses on all of our North America sales information. So my team is responsible for ensuring that we have a good picture of every single product that we sell every day, every location, pricing, packaging, all of that. And so my team is responsible for that. And our end customer, internal customers, so it's the marketing group, it's the finance group, it's the account teams that are out working with the Targets and Krogers and Walmarts and CVSs of the world. So our responsibility is to make sure we have good information and good insights into what products we're putting out in the marketplace.
Well, part of where I'm getting at, because I remember that from us talking in the last interview, is it's got to be a real coup. It's got to be a tremendous advantage for you, Monique, to be married to a branding expert if you're trying to, you know, run an organization like you do and to release a book. That's had to be a tremendous help.
It is a tremendous help, and I've learned a whole lot about social media from Justin and encouragement around Twitter and LinkedIn and all the other stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, the other thing is the personal branding topic is one, obviously, it's been a passion of mine. So for me, you know, putting the music and book in context, for me, it's, you know, pursuing my passion around writing and singing, an element of my personal brand. Pursuing my passion around writing, authoring leadership books and whatnot, an element of my personal brand. What I'm doing with Coke and my team there and making an impact within that environment, part of who I am, my personal brand, right? So all these things, remember the model we talked about, the big circle, and inside of that are all the core, my core values, my education, kind of the building blocks of that brand. And so that's where I see kind of some of my faith components fitting in. The interesting thing, though, on the personal brand topic for the two of us is that we lead workshops together on that topic. So
really?
Yeah, which has been fun.
How
to be
cool
able to jointly do presentations, workshops on that topic, and then kind of things related. So career development, career, you know, taking the next step, and how do you pursue the next job? How do you prepare effectively? All those types of things. And so, you know, all these things kind of fit together for the two of us.
Well, when we first met, he told me about his book that was just about to come out, and he said it was on personal branding. And I said, well, I do a keynote on personal branding and all about who you are and what you stand for. And we found all these overlaps. So it has been fun to sort of combine those good points and deliver things together.
Well, how do you guys do it? I mean, have you discovered the 28-hour day? I mean, how do you get to do all this?
There's so much energy and passion coming from both of them. How do you do it?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, a lot of people don't pursue their passions and their interests. And so you just mentioned, you guys have all this energy around this and passion. Well, yeah, I mean, we're pursuing things that we really enjoy and that give back and impact others. Oh my gosh, so what if everyone did that? So the excuse we typically hear is, I don't have time. You know, I just don't know how you can make the time for writing a book or writing songs and getting those published and recorded. And I would say that I could find the time for you if I saw your schedule.
She said as she then sat down and watched 2 hours of television.
Exactly, before the 2 hours of television. Yeah, I mean, you have to make the time. So, you know what, and you can talk about writing the book, Monique, but, you know, for me, writing songs was, I'm on a flight to New York, I get my work done, I've got some extra time, I start putting down ideas around a new song. Or at night, you know, end of the night, I'm putting down ideas. And you just have to find bits and pieces of time, because you're right. I mean, most people are not just sitting around all day and all night doing nothing, and therefore they can fill it with their passions. But you've got to be really, I think, very organized about it, and also make it a big rock, a priority.
I was just about to say, it's like I said at the beginning, it's when it's a priority, you make the time for it. And it's not the little rocks that take up the time. So for me, I really don't watch very much TV. You know, I'll admit I watch Survivor, and that's pretty much the only show that I've ever watched.
Everybody has their poison, right?
Yeah, that's my show. So it's just about, you know, I don't spend hours and hours on Facebook. It's you know, I don't spend hours and hours cooking. I mean, everyone's got their passion. Training for a marathon takes a tremendous amount of time. The book was my marathon. That was what I devoted several hours to a day or a week.
It's not work when it's something you care about.
Exactly.
And passionate about. And I think you touched on the key point, both of you, when you're serving and helping others as well.
No question.
Which is a side benefit, makes it even more powerful and worth the time.
It would be empty. I think these projects would feel very empty and like they weren't enough. Like, I think without having the component around giving back or impact, forget the money part. If someone reads that book and walks away with the, wow, that was, I feel so much better, I got this tool I can now use, success.
And
stop,
that's already
stop.
Happened. Yeah. So And when I get those calls, this, and it's so great because the different chapters that people point out are all unique and individual. And I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I wrote that chapter. And then someone else would pick, you know, six chapters later, that's the one that hit me. That's what makes it all worthwhile.
That's the royalty check that really matters.
Exactly.
That has to feel so good when someone gives you that kind of feedback.
Exactly.
Well, and it doesn't have to cost money to pursue your passion. So, you know, you're training for a marathon. That doesn't have to be an expensive endeavor. I mean, there's some cost to it, but you're making the time more than that's the most costly part, is finding your time and understanding what are you doing with your time.
And when it all just gets too overwhelming, which it does at points, then you let go and let Todd. No, let go and let God. Is that right?
Oh, let go and let Todd. That sounds like the next song.
I'm writing a blog post called Let Go and Let Todd. I like it.
So how can our listeners get their hands on this book?
They can get their hands on the book a couple of different ways. One, by going to the website, which is highroadlesstraffic.com. And, of course, it's also available on Amazon. And the title of the book is The High Road Has Less Traffic.
Well, before we let you go, and of course, Justin knows this because he's been a part of this circus before, but we have a little tradition here, Monique, on a High Velocity Radio Show where we like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Absolutely. Career-wise, obviously, you asked a question about me, and I'll say, so me, I have done this, and I also see this in a lot of the corporate leaders that we assess as part of ISHR group. And that is, you know, trying to go at things, solve problems myself, and not asking for help. And it's a mistake I think I clearly have made, and probably made more earlier in my career, being afraid to ask for help. And if I look at certainly where I've come and certainly going through the divorce, I couldn't do it by myself. I had to rely on a network. And so that's been the learning around it. You've got to be okay asking other people for help. And people want to help.
People really do want to help, don't they?
They really do want to help. And I write about that in the book. You know, let people help. When I was going through this, people were like, what can I do to help you? And it might have been something as small as grabbing a Starbucks and bringing it over, or watching my kids for a little bit, or just being a listening ear. But let people help because they want it. We all want to help when someone needs us, and it doesn't have to be something huge, but ask for the help and accept the help.
I think that's terrific. That's advice.
Phenomenal.
So, Justin, I know you've done it once, but I'm getting a sense that, I don't know, maybe you've made a mistake since we saw you last.
I'm sure. I mean, with anything in life, there are mistakes, and I think the most important thing is how you handle those and what you learn from them. And what I'll state, just like I say anytime I talk to a group, it's typically the mistake is not taking action. And so for me personally, I think I could have taken action on pursuing my own interests and doing other things around the music space and the writing space earlier than I did. And I know I used this one the last time, but what the reason it comes to mind again is just thinking back over the last week or two, actually, when I spoke to one or two different groups, and the feedback being, again, how can I go pursue those things? I'm going to go do those things. I wish I had started earlier. And it's never too late, as I said before. And I guess the lesson learned is not to let anything get in the way of giving it a shot and getting out and doing the marathon or the triathlon, and getting out and trying your guitar lessons and getting out and speaking to groups on divorce and other things like that.
I mean, that is such important advice, I think. Just get out there and try it. And if you get bloodied up,
worst case, you can check that box and say you gave it a shot. But I'll tell you, you know, I don't want to be the one to get down the road and look back and wish I'd tried it when I was X, Y, Z years of age.
And Stoney, you say you get bloodied up. I think at the end of the day, I think when you're on your deathbed and you're looking back, it's not that you accomplished it. It's that I think you got bloodied up becomes the more memorable experience part of that.
That's an interesting point. I think you're absolutely right.
So, Justin, how can people find all your music, including and as well as your book?
Yep. So my website's Hahnemann.com, Hahnemann, Hahnemann.com. But of course, all the music is on iTunes, and that's the first place I'd go to get to it very quickly. But you can link to it in lots of different ways off of my website.
And final question.
Yes.
When you win the Grammy, will you please mention Stone and I?
Well, Of course. One thing I'll just say, though, on the topic around success is and getting bloodied up a little bit. I mean, there will be people that don't like songs or this album. There will be people that don't like aspects of the book or this book. And that's the case for anything you do. And when you're putting yourself out there in the musical space or when anytime you write something, I mean, you've got to be prepared for that and, again, ready to take the next step.
Well, there's people that drink Pepsi.
Not in our household.
Not in mine either, for whatever
that's
worth.
Not happening. Sorry.
What a fun show. I think this is one of the most fun shows we've ever done.
This has been a real fun show, absolutely.
So what's
we appreciate
different?
You having us.
The four out of the five of us have done this a lot. We've been here before. So what's the difference? I think it's Monique, right?
Yeah,
I like
it's
that.
It's definitely Monique.
I like
she's
that.
A differentiating
clearly.
Factor.
It's a very fun family, isn't it?
I am just, you know, the whole time they're talking about this publishing empire of theirs, I see that spinning Time magazine, you know, and it lands and you got the two of them talking about their music and their book. I think there's some huge things coming down the pike for these two.
The Hahnemann Media Empire. Yeah. Yeah. I see it.
Well, we again, thank you for having us on the show.
Yeah, how do you address that? Thank you both so much.
I think Justin's a little more humble than maybe you and I are at times.
Clearly.
Oh, what a great time. It was an absolute delight having you both Thanks. On the show. We said it once, we meant it then, and we're going to say it now, and we mean it now. We'd love to have you back sometime, especially you, Monique.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you guys having us on. This was a lot of fun this morning.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Justin Hahnemann, and the Monique Hahnemann, our executive producer, Lee Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the Fast Lane.